You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there. Well, hello and welcome to the show that is, man, if adventure had a name, the Indie Files would be it. I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and I'm so excited to be back with Yancey Evans as we are going to be swinging into Chicago tonight.
Yeah, I just got back from Chicago on a little mini adventure with Ernest Hemingway and Elliot Ness. What more could you ask for? Got to listen to some great tunes.
I mean, maybe some blues and jazz. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that sounds like a winner to me.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a slam dunk of an episode as the man himself, Harrison Ford, is actually back for this episode. And so as we dive in, remember you could find us wherever you get your podcasts. We're in the 602 Club feed, so just make sure you're subscribed so you get the episodes as soon as they drop. Of course, you could find us all over social media. We are on X Twitter at the 602 Club. We're on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM, the entire network at Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. You can also find us online at our new website, tfm.fan. And then, of course, we've got the listeners only discussion group over there on Facebook called the Babel Conference that you can join. But Yancey, I just wanted to ask you, this is one of those interesting episodes, and maybe the most interesting episode of the series. And it's just because they were able to get Harrison Ford back for this episode to do the opening, you know. So he is an older Indy, but he is not the old Indy, of course, that we've come to know and love throughout the series. Normally opens up our episodes. And so I just wanted to ask you about what you think the thought process was behind, you know, getting Ford to do this. What do you think that just kind of adds to the episode in general?
Well, I think it's a bunch of things that all, you know, kind of coalesced and was able to work out. I think if Lucas had his druthers, he probably would have used Harrison Ford more in the show if he had a chance to. This was just fortuitous timing because I think Ford was in the middle of shooting The Fugitive, and he had a couple of days away from the production. And as a favor to George, he was like, you know, and that's why he's got the beard, because he's got his Richard Kimball beard. And so he had a couple of days away, and then the director, Carl Schultz, and Lucas himself actually directed some of the stuff with Ford as well. And they just kind of were doing guerrilla filmmaking for 2 days. I think that's how long they had him available for. And so I think, you know, I think if Lucas had his way, he would have loved to have had Ford in the show more. But I think he probably approached ABC because they're looking at it as like, hey, this will help ratings. This will be fun. And Ford was doing it on the cheap, you know, as a favor. So it's like a no-lose proposition. So, but it follows the same formula where it's an older Indy reflecting back on an adventure from his youth. But it's cool seeing Indy from the 50s in this little mini adventure at the beginning of the and the end of the tail end of the film. So,
yeah, I mean, it like you said, the fact that Ford's, you know, shooting The Fugitive and, you know, he's willing to come in and do this, I think kind of shows you just how much he cares about the character.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, I think that if it had been possible for that to get him more often, I could totally see Ford doing it. I think, you know, more than any other character that he's played, I think he loves Indy the most. And I think it's the one that he holds closest to his heart in the sense of, like, this is me, you know? I think partially he just puts so much of himself in to the character. And so I love that he's back at the beginning. And I think, you know, in some ways, it really doesn't even matter what he's doing the episode, him just being there. And it's a fun beginning, right? Like when, you know, having him bookend the episode. But I mean, the fact that they're being chased, it's snowy.
And you got classic John Williams music playing in the chase. And it's just great stuff.
And so I think all in all, this is the perfect, coming together. And I think it's the thing that really does set this, episode apart from everything else we've seen. And part of that, too, I think, has to do with not only does the production get Ford back, but I would say, and I don't know if you'll agree with me, but I feel like that this is one of the strongest scripts that we've seen so far. And even in the sense of like the way as this is edited together as the movie, it just flows very well. It feels like they were able to just find the exact right formula to get this all together, which isn't something that's happened the whole time.
Yeah. Well, the writer, Jewel Selbo, I think is her name, she was already a well-established writer for television by the time she came on board. I think she writes a couple other episodes as well. And she ended up writing, too, for I think she wrote for Hercules and some other action adventure shows. She really understands story beats and how to keep a story going forward, because what's really interesting is the first half of the episode is all about jazz and the blues, but it's just as interesting as the last half, which is all the adventure stuff. And it all works. The script is incredibly strong. There's some really great moments of high drama, especially with Goldie, the girl singer, her family, that dinner table scene is really good. There's just a lot of the script is really, really strong in this episode. It is one of my favorites.
Well, and I think that one of the highlights as well is, you're talking about both sides of the script, right? And they are very different types of stories, because one is so much driven like by the social conversation, which I think is handled incredibly well and we'll definitely get into. But then the other side, of course, is slightly more humorous.
Yeah, it's more of a madcap adventure.
Yes. But at the same time, it's actually dealing with a lot of historical characters and a storyline that actually happened, right? And so I think that might be just, again, the way in which all the connections kind of go together, and the fact that, the underlying thread is that Indy's at school here in Chicago, and the fact that, his roommate is Elliot Ness, who is kind of a stick in the mud, and Indy is kind of exploring these different sides of, his life and getting roped in, and then the connection, of course, with the restaurant that he works at. Like, all of this, when it comes to the script, again, it just feels so polished. And so there really is, I think, just an incredible beauty of the fact that you get the main man back, right? And then you're also able, to have a script that makes this come to life in a way that, some of the stories have really popped that we've talked about, and some of them haven't as much. And this is just a place where it really, every single part of the episode had me glued to it from start to finish. And of course, part of that is drawing you in with Harrison Ford, but I keep thinking to myself, man, this would have been really bad if they drew you in with Harrison Ford and then the episode itself didn't live up to that draw, like that you were bored by it. And neither side of this story was I bored in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it's just, even what makes the first half of the story so compelling is, especially if you're kind of introducing it to kids, they get to learn about some of the history of jazz and the blues and how it developed in the United States, and some of the artists, because you actually get to meet some of them from the era. But then it's intermixed with social commentary on what's going on with segregation, how African Americans are being treated in the country at the time, just race relations in general. It, like you said, it's handled so well. It's walking a very delicate balance where it's saying things that things need to be changed, but it's also speaking out against the more militant aspect of it that could arise from it. And it's just handled so well that it just keeps that energy going through the first couple of acts. And then you get to the murder mystery, kind of madcap adventure at the end, which just feels like it's almost like the icing on top of the cake that you, because you kind of want that release, that action adventure release, and you get it. And so, and the conclusion is fantastic because it's typically the Chicago way, it's just things are left somewhat unresolved. So, it's probably one of the better scripts of the show. I just high praise from that.
Well, and I would say, apart from Harrison Ford being back, the fact that Jeffrey Wright is such a main player, especially in part one of the episode, is just phenomenal. I mean, and I think he obviously proves himself to be an incredible actor, even at this point in his career. You also had Jane Krakowski back as well, which right. It's so fun to see her in this role and allowing her to be able to sing what she can do. That's one of the things
Keith
that
David.
I was just...
Keith yes. David was in yeah. it.
It's
just
I mean,
a great role. And you also had, most people don't know it, but Forrest Whitaker's brother is in the episode. He looks just like his brother. So if you're watching and you go, is that Forrest Whitaker playing the piano? It's like, no, it's his brother Damon. But it's just got a... That was the one thing I was going to talk about. The cast in this is just yes. absolutely phenomenal, yep. top to bottom. There's not a weak aspect. That's the thing that makes this episode, like you were saying, pop so well. Is the casting is just immaculate. There's top to bottom. It's just amazing.
And I think that's what really brings the story home. Like you were mentioning, the moments that we spend around the table at Goldie's house, right? And we're having these very charged discussions about, coming home from war and the experience that, both Indy and her brother are having, right? And they're different in many ways, right? It's difficult for them to both come home, but for very different reasons, and I appreciate the way that it's handled. And as you mentioned, this shows kind of very much the roots of where the militantism will come in, right, on both sides of this issue. And I think it's handled with a real deftness. And I think the beauty of that, like you said, we're not only being introduced to jazz and these things, but I think it's a perfect introduction for kids to understand the issues of race relations at this point in history, and it's also the beauty of the thing that would help them to then understand the rise of somebody like Martin Luther King Jr. And Malcolm X on the other side. You're really getting to see in some ways the both sides of the argument here that, kids will learn about later on. And so, a big part of what you said about the choice of actors here, this needs great performances to make it come alive, and you get that from every single person in the cast, and it's really important because I think if any one of them is not able to make you feel what that character is feeling with these charged conversations, it would have been a real detriment to the story. And that's not the case. I mean, we just don't have that. And I was just really impressed by every single person involved. And again, I think just the way the writing is allowing us to understand both sides of the issue.
Yeah, and I just want to point out in particular, Jeffrey Wright, this is actually one of his first acting gigs on film or television. And I ran into a podcast he did a couple of months ago. He was promoting some film I think he was in, or television series he was in at the time. And the lady, the interviewer, actually asked him about his experience on this. And I was shocked to hear him. This show was handled like a movie production, not just a television show, because they actually let him work for a couple of months researching the character he played, Sidney Bechet, who was actually mm-hmm. one of my all-time favorite jazz musicians, but that's a side subject. But he researched him for like 2 months and was watching old footage of him to learn how he played and all these mannerisms he had and everything. And he just embodied the character, but I was shocked that he was given the time, like you would in a professional film, to actually work on this. It's not like, oh, we need you next week. You know, we're going to shoot this thing next week and you gotta come down. They gave him time, like a film. He developed all this. He worked with a jazz musician on developing his technique, playing the clarinet. So he was similar to what Bechet played in real life. And his performance, really, that whole first half, two-thirds, his performance really grounds this episode. It's the anchor that makes everything work, because all the other side characters are splitting, you know, they're kind of splitting off from him. And this relationship he's developing with Indy, and it just, it's freaking magic. It's just, you and everything is working. You're just like, you're watching something, you're going, God, he's just owning every scene. He's nailed it.
100%. I couldn't agree with you more. I love him in the role. And I think, you know, right here, you can see that this guy is going to be something special. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Which we all know he became. I mean, you know, when Jeffrey Wright is in something, I immediately think to myself, oh, I want to see that more.
Yeah.
Even if my level was zero, when I learned he was in it, it's like, yeah. Oh, well, maybe I should give that a chance. You know, and just, that's the gravity, I think, of his performance ability. And
let me interrupt. So when they announced that Robert Pattinson was playing Batman, I was like, oh, well, okay, maybe that'll work. But when they announced Jeffrey Wright as Jim Gordon, I was like, oh, hell yeah, I'm in on this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I think he has just earned the right to be a person that people are interested in. And I think it's amazing because, you know, he's done so much character acting. And this really did, I think, set the stage for the type of actor and performer he was going to be. And like you mentioned, them giving him the opportunity to do the research and everything, it makes the role so much more special because you need this character to be who he is and have that, you know, kind of air about him when Indy first meets him that brushes him, you know, brushes Indy off basically, and then have Indy pursue him enough to earn his respect. And I think one of the beauties of this part of the story as well is that not only are we, you know, having Indy learn about the struggle of race relations, but I think there's an incredibly beautiful story aspect that's happening here where Bechet is helping Indy understand if you want to be good at something, whatever that thing is, you've got to master the basics of it, right? And it reminded me, you know, very much of the beginning of the series where, you know, he's with his tutor and he's having to go through all of these basics and, you know, his learning. And it's like, as we get older, anything that we want to be good at, we still have to start from the beginning. you know, and it's a process of building. And anything we want to do then in that way, it's going to be us about us wanting to put in the hard work, you know. And in Indy here, of course, we see that happen, right? You know, is he a little too obsessed with jazz at the detriment of his studies? Yes. But, you know, he is willing to put in the time and the effort to understand something that he loves. And I like that because I think, again, you know, as we know, this is done because the same reason, you know, Lucas was doing Star Wars. He wants kids to understand history, and I think he wants kids to have good morals, meanings, and messages and make them think. And the character of Indy going through this process and the way in which, again, you know, Sean Patrick Flannery is doing a great job with being this character and kind of inhabiting this role. And I just got to give it to, again, the writing here, but as well as the acting and bringing a message like that out, it can be and feel heavy-handed. And I don't think that's the case at all. And again, all of those things are working to give us exactly what I think Lucas is after in this story.
Yeah. And to your point, you know, when you're dealing with these kinds of things, it can either be heavy-handed or on the completely opposite end of the spectrum, it can be so watered down. And the fact that the family table scene, you know, the dinner table scene was so pretty raw, actually. It gets pretty, you know, spicy. The son is really frustrated because his attitude is I went and fought for my country and I can't even get a job. And then, you know, and then you have a race riot over a kid who drifted too far into the white section of the beach, which Indy actually experiences in a really great, just one quiet scene, very, very little said in the scene. Black kids are playing in a section of the beach. You don't even see the demarcation point. And their ball drifts over, and Andy kicks it back over to them and says hi to them. And then all of a sudden, this really stern lifeguard comes up and gives them the what for daring to cross over into the black segregated part of the beach. And just those kind of moments really kind of, especially for a kid watching this, those are the kinds of things that, especially a visual like that, that kind of imparts, you know, it really hits a kid a certain kind of way because, you know, Andy's just, and then they go cut back to shots and Andy's just looking at, these are just kids, you know, what are we doing here? You know, and Andy has that kind of expression, like, what are we even doing? You know, these are just little kids playing on a beach, you know, and these are the same color kids that he was leading in Africa and stuff like that. So he, you know, he's completely confused that people could treat other people like that. Yeah.
Well,
so.
I love that too because I think the way that it's done, the other beauty of it is that as you're watching it, you're reminded how far we've come, right? And I think you know that the sad part is that there are still people who have these attitudes out there, you know, and again, like you said. This is just handled so well, and I feel like I rarely ever see this handled with such deference and grace towards all aspects of it, so that it you know, I can understand as a viewer every facet of what's happening on all sides of the issue. And I think it's great, you know, and I really love that. And like you said, you know, the heaviness of the first episode, you know, is such an interesting thing that the other side where we're learning about the blues is less heavy. In the sense of the story is allowed to have a much more kind of like madcap zaniness to it, the silliness of having Ness and Hemingway in the same storyline here, you know, with going up against, you know, Al Capone and right. his, you know, taking over of this restaurant and all. I mean, it's just, again, that's really well handled. And I think you put it so well. You do need this part of the story to be a release valve for all the emotions that you've kind of felt watching that first part. And it's interesting because it also just lets you know, like, we're talking about the mob here, right? So Chicago yep. is just a place. It's rife with racial strife, but it's rife with strife between different mobs, right? You got the Italian mob, you got the Irish mob, you know, and it's creating this city that kind of feels a bit like a powder keg when you think about it.
Yeah, and that part, it's handled so well because it kind of touches on every little aspect of it. You know, there's because you get kind of the journalistic investigation part of it, but you also get the nitty gritty kind of we're gonna go look at the forensics of what happened here, and it's all kind of culminating in this stew of corruption. And which is ultimately, because of the way the story ends, that's where Indy finds his blues. You know, that's where Indy finds that part of him that's just kind of like, because, you know, as it's so well put, jazz and the blues are different things. The music is different. Yep. Everything is different about it. And blues is more about a mood. And Indy had to feel that kind of sense of helplessness that he can't change everything, you know. Even though they've got Al Capone and this other and the guy's brother dead to rights, they got all the evidence to at least start an investigation. It gets, you know, thrown in the wastebasket by a corrupt police official, and that's that. So, you know, that's where Indy finds his blues, is that sometimes things just aren't going to work out in the end. But as Indy says at the very end of the episode, when the pipe gets stolen back by the bad guys, sometimes things do work out, you know? So, there's always that kind of glimmer of hope. So you just got to keep going. So, and I think that's what's, and I loved the interplay between Indy and Hemingway and Ness, how they kind of each in a weird way, kind of complimented each other in a really strange kind of way. And I love how Hemingway and Ness by the end were just shouting at each other and just, they hated each other, but they needed each other at the same time, because Hemingway's coming at it from this logical narrative standpoint, and Ness is coming at it more from the structured kind of, here's the evidence, this is what I've got, you know, and this is why this guy's guilty. And Hemingway's coming at it from more, this is his motivation, you know, because obviously he's a writer. And it just worked so great. It's really a lot of fun.
And, I mean, too, the beauty of introducing, you know, kids to a character like Elliot Ness, you know, you can go then learn more about the guy who helped bring down Al Capone in the end, you know. Right. You can enjoy watching a great movie like The Untouchables to get this character. I think one of the things they do is that they rightly show that Ness is a stickler for the rules, right? He's also a stickler for understanding the law, you know, to all in all of its facets on how we can then, you know, capture people, you know. And I thought that was great in the sense that you're helping to see that, you know, this kid kind of finds out the thing that he's good at in college. And then he runs with it in the end, right? And makes his mark on history. And also, you know, this is meeting Ernest Hemingway before he becomes the famous writer that we all know, right? When he says he's going to go off to Paris in the 20s, we know what that's going to lead to, right? That's going to lead to him writing some of the greatest books in American literature. You know, and the experience that he's going to have there with people like F. Scott Fitzgerald and others, you know, David McCullough has a great book about all the Americans in Paris in the 20s and the experiences they had there and how it helped shape them and their art and everything. So that, I mean, like you said, it's just one of those ways in which every single part of the episode is just working. And then, like you said, at the very end, the message coming down to, you know, don't give up hope. Because, yeah, some things, and sometimes things don't go our way. But then there are those other times where they do, right? And, you know, especially you think about where Indy is as a person who's, you know, lived through the First World War. He's now lived through the Second World War at this point. So, you know, he has seen the ways in which things have worked out for the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between, you know? And what I appreciate about this episode, too, is that when I think about this episode and then the way in which we'll meet Indy again in the 50s, you know, with Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, it's like there's a really good connection between this and that, and who this Indy is and who that Indy is. I think that's the thing that I really, really enjoyed about this, is just kind of how well it ended up fitting still with what we get later for Indy and Crystal Skull, which I think this episode is obviously one, you know, George probably had to have in his mind when he's working on the script there and the storyline for Crystal Skull, because you do want this to match up. And these characters feel very similar, except in that sense where it's like Indy at that point has also been through being more involved with working with the Cold War, right? And the spy life, and that's kind of jaded him just a little bit. And like, I don't know, man, it's hard for me to not feel like we've just spent the whole episode kind of gushing about it. And yet, like, I can't apologize for that, because this episode truly is, I think, just that good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is one of those, I mean, everything's working. The music, sadly, one of the reasons you can't, like, if you buy, it was on sale not that long ago, the Young Indiana Jones Adventures on Apple and iTunes. It was only like $17.99 or $19.99. And unfortunately, it doesn't include the episode, The Mystery of the Blues, because of licensing over the music in the episode. So you either have to get the old DVD sets, or you have to find a copy of it online and watch it on like YouTube.
I'm not gonna lie, buy the DVD sets, because I have them, and watching them on my 4K television with my 4K player, it looks phenomenal for a DVD. I mean, it looks like it's a Blu-ray quality, even though it's not. So the mastering of this on DVD, they spared absolutely no expense. It looks great.
And you get some great little bonus features about jazz and the jazz at the time. And I think there's one on Elliot Ness and Al Capone, too, a documentary on them. And there's one on Ernest Hemingway, I'm pretty sure. So anyway, but it's just there's nothing really to complain about. I'm going to gush over this episode. It's one of my favorite episodes of the show. So,
I feel like the answer is obvious, but what are you going to rate the episode?
Like 4.55. I mean, it's really great. I mean, I don't know. The only thing I might say is, for somebody coming to this, there is kind of this very, very much. And the reason I might say 4.5 is there's very much this transition period where you can tell that these are two separate stories they put together in a movie, because the tonality of them is very different, like we've discussed. Yeah. So for some people that might put somebody off, but I think as a whole it works great as a feature, and I don't have a problem with it at all. So I'll give it like 4.5. So let's split in the middle, 4.75. They're the.
I think what you said is important because there is that interesting aspect, and this happens with all of the episodes that you watch as the total film, right?
Right.
Is that there usually is some tonality difference, and yet I think it works well enough, and I think
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I think that's one of the reasons they broadcast them together, is because the tonality wasn't so vastly different, and the stories were kind of interlinked anyway, that it just kind of made more sense as a self-contained story.
Yeah. Well, and they had, you know, similar characters showing up, you know, that
right.
And so, yeah, I look, this is a five for me. I think this, this and the two-parter that we did, with Indy in Africa, you know, during World War One, I think these are just hallmarks of the series, right? And I think it just goes to show, and this is one of the episodes as the full movie as it was presented back in the day, even then, it goes to show what Lucas was after in the best possible way. And it's just so good. I loved it. I loved every minute of it. And it's one that, you know, I think when I think about, you know, the series itself, and like going back and watching it at some point, you know, this is one of those that you'll go back and just rewatch because it's such a great, you know, hour and 30 minute episode together, and it creates its own feel as almost like a mini Indiana Jones movie, which is great. Loved it. I can't wait to dive back in with you here at Yancey on the Indie Files. But where can people find you if they want to catch up with you?
So basically all the different social medias, you can find me, my name is under social media is Galandra1. That's the character from the Brian Daley Han Solo novels. He's a bad guy, but I'm not a bad guy. So I'll be nice. Or you can find me on Facebook under my name, Yancey Evans. I have a blog eventually I'm getting around to. I've got a bunch of stuff I've written, and at some point I just need to publish it and stop editing it. And so that's where you can find me, and on this show as well.
Well, of course, you could find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02 here in the 602 Club with the main show as well. So many great things coming out this summer, which we've been enjoyed talking about, and some not so great things, which we enjoy talking about anyway. You can also find me on the network, of course, all the great Star Trek talk with Chris Jones. Plus, over on the Nerd Party Network, you'll find me with two shows. One is called Owl Post, a completed show about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, and an aggressive negotiations with John Mills talking about Star Wars each and every week. But thank you so much for joining us, and y'all come back next year.